සුඛී හොන්තු සාදු සාදු අනුමෝදාමි අනුමෝදි තබ්බං ඛමාමි ඛමි තබ්බං කේ වෙල්කම් එවරිවන් ෆෝ ද වීක්ලි ඉංග්‍රීසි මීඩියම් ඩිස්කෂන් ඇස් යූ ඕල් නෝ වි ආයින් ද අටක වර්ග පාරායන අටක වර්ග සුත්ත නිපාත so before going to the assigned sutta I would like to ask if anyone wish to have a few minutes for any comments or reports or any topics
avasarai bante we have three reports today with your permission I'd like to present them
yes sari
yes bante there's a small note on top of that dear bante these are the leftover reports from RST, I think it's from Captain Satipasala. Please send your advice and it will be sent to the reporters. Nobody then bless you, it's from Vishnu. So this report, the first one is from Vishnu. Mindful walking. In mindful, found my path and began walking. In the beginning, I had thoughts because we
Ari, there are some disturbances we can't clear here. We can't hear continuously.
In mind, is it clear now, Bante?
Yeah, try will you.
In mindful walking, I found my path. In the beginning, I had a lot of thoughts because we had just celebrated Ashmi's birthday and I had come back from camp yesterday. Then after a couple of I began feeling the air blowing past me. I noticed that I got cooler and cooler. Then I noticed the lifting and placing of my feet. When lifting, the heel lifted, then the arch, and then the toes. And when I placed my foot, the heel placed first, then the inner arch, then the outer arch, then the toes from smallest to biggest. I also noticed that as I was lifting my heel on the foot, the heel on the other foot would place. The heel had the most pressure throughout the session. In the beginning, I had some thoughts and my sisters didn't talk that much, so they were not distraction. I did mindful walking for 40 minutes and I was mindful for most of the session. Mindful sitting. In mindful sitting, I found my spot and began sitting. As I began, I felt sleepy, so I observed the sleepiness. I noticed that I felt cold and my chest felt heavy. This continued for a while, and I didn't fall asleep and started to observe. Since I still felt a bit sleepy, I noticed that the breaths were heavier and longer than usual. The in-breath was cold and long, and out-breath was warm and longer than the in-breath. On observing this after a while, I got sleepier and sleepier until I fell asleep. I slept for the rest of the session. I had some thoughts throughout the session. I did mindful sitting for 40 minutes, and I was mindful for most of the session. General mindfulness. This week, I did ice skating at my school camp. It was much harder than I expected. The ice was very slippery, so I held onto the side. After a few laps, it got a bit easier. I still had to hold the side. I noticed that I was really cold at the start, but after a couple of laps, I started sweating. I slipped 3 times. That's the end of the report, Bhante. This is from Vishmi.
Yeah. I think Vishmi is now 13, and last time I did not come to the session, and I got the written report also, but at the beginning it says that a lot of thoughts and a lot of distraction, but the report says you managed well in walking as well as sitting, because if you are disturbed, sleepiness never comes. Sleepiness means some kind of a inward kind of a calming down. So therefore sleepiness is again one extreme. Other extreme means you are too much agitated and you are complaining yourself and all the kind of thing. That means nothing wrong. So therefore, report is much dramatic, eventful, good. we are going to the next.
This report is from Kisa, 18 years old. Mindful walking. I started mindful walking on the end of the track. Silently and mindfully started walking. As I placed my foot, I felt the silent coolness of the tiles. And when I lift, I felt the coolness vanish. And I only felt the cool air around. Also felt the bending of my knee and the stretch of my leg when lifting my foot. It was quite the opposite when I placed it. I walked in for 15 minutes. Mindful sitting. I sat on the full lotus posture with my back straight. First, I scanned my whole body. I felt my on top of my right, and I also felt a gush of warmth between the places where my legs touched. My right hand was also on my left. Then after scanning my body, I concentrated on my breath. When inhaling, I felt my breath touch the end of each nostrils. I could not feel it go beyond the point, but sometimes I did. When exhaling, I felt it touch my upper lip. I meditated like this for 15 minutes. There was some distraction, but I managed to bring my mind to the present moment. Teruvan Saranai, Kisari. That's the end of the report, Bhante.
What was the age?
13 years, Bhante.
Yeah. So that's also 15 minutes is not enough. If possible, you can continue. No harm, you can continue with the same. And increase the time slowly, slowly, because you have touched to the present primary object and now it's high time. Slowly, slowly increase the time, and while increasing, you will develop the expertise to see the detail of your primary object, that is to say, Dhamma sap, juice. So please strive through.
Next report, this is from Situmi, she is 12 years old. Mindful sitting. I sat down on the floor in the posture, keeping one palm on top of the other. I kept my back straight and my body relaxed. I started to concentrate on my breath just after I no more heard the sound of the bell. After a few moments, I felt uncomfortable with the posture I was in, so I changed my posture into full lotus. My breath was getting colder and out-breath was getting hotter. Shoulder rising up and down, and my tummy, chest moving forward, front and back. Throughout, thoughts kept coming and going by time, so in each time I used SMS to come back to the present moment. Minutes passed by as I heard the clicking sound of the clock. I got a back pain, but I didn't know where it occurred. I wanted to know where it occurred, while at the same time, I wanted to open my eyes. I knew that it was a want, but not a need. Continued to close my eyes. While I was trying to concentrate, I got a little pain in the head. I took it as a distraction and didn't mind about it. Later on, I got to know that the pain occurred in the spinal cord. Do mindful sitting until the session ended. I am now interested in doing meditation and enjoy today's session. This is from Situmi.
Situmi, may be different. And so younger girl like that is good. And she is about to see the changing nature of the object, changing nature of the breath, becoming warmer and warmer and warmer, cooler and cooler and cooler. That is the way the changing nature is occurring. Usually it's a business of elderly people, but even at very young age, if you are properly introduced, they are about to not, but you have to appreciate it. So therefore keep on practicing and see not only the object, the manners how it changes from one to the other. That will give the maturity in the meditation at the mastery. And once you learn the breath, you will learn everything on the earth. So therefore, it's a good start. Please keep on with the noting, changing nature, evolution nature, and the revolutionary nature. That is why you become interested in sitting.
Thank you, Bandit. There's no more.
Avastrai Swaminwansa, I would like to briefly introduce my sitting meditation report for the last 2-3 days. When I close my eyes, it's difficult to say the gross object as inhaling and exhaling, because when I close my eyes, I'm first in a very relaxed, dark, place where there's no feelings and I just have the sensation that I'm here and I'm sitting. From there, the mind sometimes goes into feelings and again comes back to the dark state. This has been going on for the past 2 days and it's a repeated process. Every paryanka, there's this dark place and then I have a feeling that I'm inside a feeling, and as soon as I get to know that, the mind again returns back to the dark place. Sometimes it's difficult to say if I'm in a feeling or if I'm actually there. At that moment, the mind quickly comes back to either the breath or to the sensation that I'm sitting here. That's basically the end of my report, Bhante.
So when such a changes happen, your self is disappearing. Ego idea is disappearing. So you can't say in and out because no boundary. So it's well explained by Ken Wilber's book, No Boundary. Boundary is there as far as you are there. Me and not me is the game. Whenever me is disappearing, me and not me is disappearing because no boundary. Then the peace. Boundary makes the tension, frustration, and expansion of the boundary and claiming outside into the inside. And ultimately, even if you are a meditator or not, there is no defined boundaries on the earth. Everything is man-made. My human mind is very cussed. Always make boundaries. Moment you made boundaries, you are making tension. You make the me and not me different. That is the basic intrinsic characteristic of the mind or the consciousness. So no boundary, you can have theoretical idea, that is to say without wisdom. So the whenever no boundary happen, if you can understand, that is with wisdom. So that means you become independent. You become contented, sovereign. But we have a fear for that. We have the fear of freedom. We fear of Nibbana. Because that disappearance of me appear like boring and outcasted. So careful, be aware. Please continue. Okay, we have taken almost 20 minutes for this, and I hope that we can go back to the theoretical part, the sutta itself. I would like to invite Venerable Buddha Rakhita to continue, please.
So we're reading the fourth sutta in this collection of the octaves. It's a chapter in the Sutta Nipada. It's at the third chapter. So this sutta is a little bit complicated, so I hope we can explain it to you. I see the pure, the supreme health. A person achieves full purity through what is seen. Directly knowing thus, having known, it is supreme. I contemplate the pure. One falls back on knowledge. So the background to this sutta is there was once a person born in India, and he had what appeared like light rays emitting from his chest, and it looked like the rays of a moon. So this feature of this light rays coming from his chest were perceived as a meritorious sign. And the commentaries also mentioned that this person had been a woodsman in a previous life, and he had met a rich man who wanted some sandalwood, and he helped collect and gather the sandalwood, and the rich man brought the sandalwood back to his city and said, if you come to visit me, bring sandalwood. And so this woodsman brought sandalwood and stayed with the rich man. And while he was there in the city, it was at the time of the Buddha Kassapa, and he went to the Chaitya, to the temple of the Buddha Kassapa in the Buddha Kassapa's monastery. And he didn't have other things like flowers and clothes or garlands or other things to offer. So what he did was he made a disc out of sandalwood powder, and he offered this disc It was the size of a bronze tray, and he raised it above the golden bricks at the Great Chaitya. And then at the sunrise, the rays of the sun appeared. And having seen this, he was very pleased, and he made a wish that he be reborn, and when he be reborn, that he be reborn with rays appearing on his chest. So subsequently, in subsequent births, he was reborn with this kind of strange phenomena of rays coming out of his chest. And so in the time of the Buddha Gautama, then he was reborn, and he, when he was reborn, he was brought to the Brahmins for the naming festival, and they noticed this phenomena of rays coming out of his chest. And so some of them took him, and basically they would bring him around through villages and towns, announcing that whoever sees, his name was Chandaba, whoever sees Chandaba gains fame and wealth and other achievements in this and in the next life and go to heaven. So whenever they would preach, lots of people would come, and they would say, whoever sees him gains wealth, fame, and heaven. So lots of people got excited about this, and the Brahmins then would only allow people who were very wealthy, who made money offerings, to see this rays coming out of his chest. Eventually, Chandaba and the Brahmins arrived at Sawati. And again, they came across the Buddha at Sawati, and lots of people going to see the Buddha at Jeta's Grove. And so in the evening, Chandaba went to see the Buddha. And when he saw the Buddha, the rays in his chest disappeared. And he was going to leave the place. And the Buddha asked him, "Why are you leaving? Are you afraid?" And he said, "I'm not going because I'm afraid, but because the light in my chest does not compare to the glory of the Buddha." So having again sat down in front of the Buddha, because the Buddha had asked him to stay, he saw the excellence of the Buddha's form, the light rays coming from the Buddha, it's called the obasa, and other characteristics. Another characteristics from the Buddha. So he said to the Buddha Gautama, "The ascetic Gautama is very powerful. The light that appears on my chest is trifling. Having taken me even for just so long, the Brahmins wander all over Jambodipa. But though the ascetic Gautama possesses such excellent characteristics, he has no conceit or pride. Surely possessing perfect qualities, he must be the teacher of devas and human beings." So with this, he requested to become ordained under the Buddha. And having been taught meditation on the five body parts, he developed insight and in no time attained arahantship. So other monks had started to ask then, "Is it the case, friends, that those who saw Chandaba gained fame and wealth or went to heaven or attained purity just by seeing his visible form through the eye door?" And the Buddha then answered in verse the sutta that we've just begun to go through. So this is the background. And again, I'll just repeat, the Buddha says, "I see the pure, the supreme health. A person achieves full purity through what is seen. Directly knowing thus, having known it is supreme, I contemplate the pure. One falls back on knowledge." So here in this verse, the bhikkhus, there is no purity through such kind of sight. Further, the foolish may theorize who saw the Brahman Chandaba or anyone like him who saw him who was impure because of the stains of defilements, and one who was ill because he had not overcome the illness of defilements. Yet he claims that he directly knows, "I see the pure supreme health." So in this way, we can see that the Buddha is immediately not giving any credence to the idea that you know, if you see somebody who has astonishing features or some particular aura or such phenomena, that this is seeing the pure, and that by seeing the pure that one gains oneself. I once had the experience of being in India, and we went to see Sai Baba, and he was giving a silent darshana on that morning. So he was wearing his orange robe and he had his fuzzy hair, and he didn't say anything the whole time. You know, it was very silent, and there was a large crowd and everybody was looking at him. And some people would say that they saw like a golden aura extending from Sai Baba. And some people would get so overwhelmed by the experience of just looking at Sai Baba that they would faint. And so I would ask people about this. I would ask, you know, what was your experience of seeing Sai Baba? And they would say that they saw this golden aura, or that they had, you know, they had become, you know, quite overwhelmed by the whole experience of seeing Sai Baba. So even in this present time, we have such phenomena of people who have such a charisma or power, or again, you can see it maybe around some stars in India. Again, it's quite famous that people will camp out around a star's compound in Delhi or in Mumbai. And, you know, they get overwhelmed when they see, they become hysteric when they see these kind of stars. And just like even the sight of seeing such a famous person is considered like a blessing. However, again, the Buddha really points back to what he calls defilements. So these are the states of the mind. So for him, purity is not to be found outside of, out of the body. So it is not in the object of what we see, but the problem and the solution to the problem is within the subject, the person that is doing the seeing. That purity or impurity is to be found within the person themselves. So this is a wonderful thing, because we're not reliant on meeting these kind of magical or famous people, where we have the problem and the solution within our own heart. So this is very liberating. We don't have to, we're not reliant on special external circumstances. We can actually generate our own insight, our own knowledge, and develop our own pure mind. So the Buddha immediately begins to disclaim or discount what people say about, well, you know, can you become famous? Can you get wealthy? And can you go on into heaven if you just see somebody who has these, you know, peculiar signs of purity? And so the Buddha is repeating back what he understands people to be saying. So he says, I see the pure, the supreme health. A person achieves full purity through what is seen. So he's stating here this strange belief or idea, this notion, this wrong view. He's phrasing what people understand by it. He's not advocating it. He's just saying, is this what you mean? Is it that you mean when I see somebody with these peculiar marks, I see the pure, I see the supreme health? So this is very important when we are trying to understand other people, that we reply back when they say something like, I get this vision when I look at a picture of Sai Baba or something like that. So then you say to them, is it that you're saying I see the pure, the supreme health, a person achieves full purity through what is seen? And they will say, yes, that's my belief, that's my understanding. So the Buddha doesn't try to presume. You know, everybody talks about how the Buddha was omniscient and he knew other people's minds, but yet in the suttas you find that he's always trying to clarify very clearly what it is that what is the belief, what is the understanding of the person. He doesn't presume that he knows. He starts by clarifying and stating it out. And then he'll tackle it afterwards. Once he'll go systematically through the understanding of that particular person or that particular set of views, and he'll tackle each one very, very carefully. So that's why this sutta opens in kind of such a strange way, where he states what we, if you follow Buddhism a lot and you understand the teachings, then you'll immediately be kind of perplexed. What's the Buddha talking about here? But simply he's restating this strange wrong view that he's going to tackle. And this is rather common, as I've just mentioned, even down to this very present time. We find people adulating stars. We even call them stars. They're human beings. They're not planets. And we give them very special permission. And, you know, we elect them as politicians. For instance, Ronald Reagan was an actor before he became a politician. So what was his claim to fame? Nothing much. Or we will claim that somebody is from some lineage or some family, so we have to vote for them. We have to give them our vote because they're a family member of certain, you know, such a family. So that family have particular powers or abilities. Not necessarily. They're not necessarily very good leaders. Or they may be. It's just very individual. But it won't be because of their birthright. So this whole idea of, you know, what is pure, what is true, is going to be the essence of this sutta. And repeatedly, of course, the Buddha is going to bring us back that it is something to be found within our own mind. So then the next verse begins, if a person gains purity by the seen, if one abandons suffering by knowledge, then one with acquisitions is purified by another. The view proclaims him as one who asserts thus. So I again, the Buddha starts to tackle this understanding, this belief that we can gain purity by what is seen. So he says, if a person gains purity by the seen, he takes the idea, he doesn't challenge it. He's now going to move forward accepting, well, if indeed a person can gain purity by just seeing this strange sight of light coming out of Chandaba's chest, or by, you know, seeing a famous actress or actor, if you can become purified by just seeing this kind of pure, beautiful actress, if one can abandon suffering by knowledge of this person, then one with acquisitions, one with craving is purified by another. So here he's saying if that one type of craving is purifying another type of craving. So the view proclaimed by him as one who asserts thus. So he's just saying that this is just a view. It's just an opinion. It's not an insight. So this is a belief that I believe that if I see somebody very beautiful, that purifies me. And the Buddha says that this is just craving happening. You know, I'm actually craving the beautiful person or the beautiful sight, and I'm not really letting go of my defilements. So maybe we can listen to what Mahatero has to say. This is the first two verses.
Yeah, basically many things you already mentioned, and people are very happy to see stars. If you hit hard on your head, you can see stars. That is what your Kammattanachari is doing for you, hitting hard the stars. And not from you, it's from outside. And the great thing is, when Chandipa is going to the Buddha, his aura is disappearing. Then he starts to run away. Then Buddha asks, why? No, so what happened was, mind disappeared. Buddha says, just wait. Your thing is due to the external reason, mine is internal reason. So that is the only thing. That's the only thing Buddha says. Come and see, come and hear. Come and see here, not there. Today we had a discussion just before this. This one is singular. It's Eipasiko. Come and see. Not come and see here, but not come and see there. So I read the book series, I Am That. It's brilliant. I don't say much about because I don't like others to get into rivalry. This is that
there, not here. So people, and Dhamma says, come and look here, Eipasika. But people don't like Dhamma. They want to have Adhamma. They want to have external glorifying things. That's what he says the politicians are doing. That's what the stars are doing. And India, if you wish to be a politician, you have to be a star. It's like a god or MGR. MGR is a fighter in films. No fighting, because he is the unanimous, invincible. Because people are going by this outlook. And in this soil only the Buddha appeared. He is glorified by his own. We are creatures. We believe creator, never the creature. So therefore we are always inferior. So present day religion is to suppress people, politics is to suppress people, economy is to suppress people, and the society, social science is to suppress people and claim I am the omnipotent, omnipresent leader, please follow me. So they are just like sheep, herd of sheep, bend down, follow. And that is the whole knowledge is today. Whole information technology, whole artificial intelligence, everything is just follow suit. And these big people appear like glorifying, but they are utter filth. No morality, no restraint. Their life is so. So that is why the other countries, they claim they are developed countries, they are people, the other directing people outside. And have always the future, better future. But what happened when the corona happens? Everything disappeared. No hope. All the governments, all the technology, everything failed. And sometimes the karma and karma theory only working. Your good karma will save you. You have the immunity. But if you are believing that medicine, I am sorry. That make you depressed. Take medicine, no problem. I don't mind even the side effects of the medicine. Not the good effect of the medicine. But your understanding, your mindfulness, bring the attention here and now. All the thing people break the attention, bring the attention to, I am that. That omnipresent, omnipotent, potent God. And then I am just a beggar, I am just prayer. So such people can't go to the Buddha because they can see the Buddha's glorification is they become nullified and they start to run away. But Buddha is very compassionate, asks why you are running away and teach, because they say people come at me and looking at my glory, then they become rich. So therefore I am in high demand, I am in darshan. That is what Sai Baba is doing, darshan. And he says now mine gone, my wealth and everything, people will not come follow me. When people will follow, grow, wealth will come, you will never attain reality, you will never attain Nibbana, you will never attain as the theory, things as they are. But exactly you have to understand, people wish not that of things as they are. They want to have magic. They want to have glorification. That is why Karl Marx is telling it is like opium. All the religion. I find because people are so mad, they are addicted. And they are addicted to ignorance and pamada, mother. Pamada means not diligence. Mother means you are eccentric. This is the world. So therefore if you are in the mother, apamada, if you are in sati, be careful. Each and every moment you are mindful, you are making rivalry with the world. Each and every moment you are be with mindfulness, you are making, so don't see the me and not me difference. Just let it happen. These things are happening amidst of all the filth. Still you can be. Just like a lotus flower, the sign of color and the fragrance is taking the sap, taking the fertilizer from the bloody mud. When flower is blooming, even if you put water, it won't touch. So that is how the yogi, so it's a kind of a going against the grain. So it's unless otherwise historical background, we can't understand what the Buddha is telling. So you have to understand why this kind of thing happened. And that is what you call Nidana. Nidana means case history. It's very important, even the early one, how the Sundari's disappearance happened, how the rumors happened. And this one is due to the Champika. Champaka. What is the name? Champaka.
Chandapa.
Chandapa. Chanda means sandalwood. Chandana. Chandana wood. So Chandapa is the name came from that. And he was. It's a past merit of the offering sandalwood to the Buddha Kassapa. And this time he was not Buddhist, but the radiation came. And luckily or unluckily, he directed to Buddha and he lost his old abilities. Maybe when he go back to his home house, he may be again glorified. In front of the Buddha, no. But the Buddha teaching him how to gain it, not from the past merit, but from this life itself also. So that's all I have to add.
So the third verse, a Brahmin does not, a Brahmin does not speak of purity by another, by the seen and the heard, by good behavior and observances, by the sensed, untainted by merit and by evil, he has discarded what was taken up without creating anything here. So in this verse now, the Buddha is starting to really talk about the way of an arahant. So in this case, he is referring to a Brahmin that is a Brahmin arahant, not a Brahmin by caste or by social reckoning. So this is a Brahmin he's referring here to the arahant as a Brahmin, as the true Brahmin. So a true Brahmin or a true arahant does not speak of purity by another, meaning that they're not purified by another. So they're not purified by a special sight. They're not purified by a special sound or a special phenomena. Again, I grew up in a Christian tradition, so you know, you would go to Lourdes or to these famous sort of religious areas, or you would see these relics of people who had gone to fight in the Crusades or something like that. You'd have a church where they would get a shovel of dirt from Israel and when they fought the Crusades and bring it back to the church, and then that church would become sacred because it was the dirt from the sacred land, the holy land. And so there are all kinds of things that people will consider so-called purified. But a Brahmin, an arahant, does not speak of purity by another. They do not speak of purity by these external phenomena, by the seen and the heard, by good behaviors and observances, by the sensed. So whatever it is that is like external, or these kind of ideas, these ideologies, that is not the way of purity for a genuine arahant. Untainted by merit and by evil, he has discarded what was taken up. So this person is not touched by merit or by evil, by good or bad things. He has discarded what was taken up. He is not attached. He is not. He discards what was taken up without creating anything here. So this verse is trying to say, it is not because of good or bad deeds that one becomes enlightened, but we're going to find out that it's through a path of insight, through a path of wisdom, through a path of not of freedom from clinging. So it is without taking up, without creating anything here. So again, without becoming a house builder, without becoming somebody who has to fabricate, this idea of fabrication or manufacturing or building things up. This is the nature of the ego. You know who I am. I am such and such a person. I did such and such a thing. And by such and such efforts, I have now become, worthy of fame or gain or wealth. But for the arahant, this is not the case at all. They're not interested in what was taken up, and they're not interested in creating anything here. So this is quite also paradoxical or very conflicting to a normal person. Normally in lay life, we're taught, you have to go up the ladder. You have to go up the ladder of education. You have to get such and such qualifications. You have to climb your professional career. You need to make the right investments, live in the right area, all this kind of thing. And here is this kind of craziness from the Buddha saying that it is neither by merit nor by evil that one becomes an arahant, that he has discarded what was taken up without creating anything here. So this is completely crazy and antithetical or going against any of the norms of lay life. And in a way, it can come across as quite anarchist, but it's not. It's just a paradox. You can see that people can become extremely possessed by their own possessions, where they're just taking care of their wealth or their property, or they're trying to control. They're trying to control their children, or they're trying to control everybody around them. So that they can, not suffer through controlling their not suffering. But it's this act of controlling that actually creates all the suffering. So it's something that needs to be very carefully understood. It's only something you can achieve through insight. That the nature of wisdom is paradoxical. It is contradictory to what we normally understand, that chasing after wealth, like more than you need. I often say to people, and then what? And then what? You got a house, and then what? You moved into a bigger house, and then what? I moved into a mansion, and then what? I moved into a great estate, and then what? You still have to live somewhere, and does that really help? I had one wife, and then what? I got another wife, and then what? I got a younger wife, and then what? When you apply this kind of idea, you can start to see the kind of craziness of whether something is good or bad, that the arahant ultimately discards what was taken up without creating anything here. Anyway, maybe you can explain the third verse again, Mahatera.
Yeah, it is. I'm just saying that Dittena Sutena Silavatena Mutenava. That is the Mangala Sutta. It says, by looking, by hearing, by touching, people think it is auspicious. That is what they can't sort it out. That's why the God agent came to the Buddha and told that the Devaloka, Manasaloka, people look in the auspicious thing. And the Buddha gave 30 odd number of reasons one to become auspicious by itself. It says, Athevanacha Balanam Panitanancha Sevana. But don't associate fools. They are always glorifying. They are stars. Ultimately, you will see stars. With that kind of people. And it is so open and so foolish, so common. That means so, common sense is so uncommon. No common sense. And the dittena sutena silavatena mutenava. Punyecha papecha anupalito. Don't adhere to, if I am to tell a direct translation of the singular, punyakamma, that means meritorious deeds or skillful deeds, and apunyakamma, papa, demerits, don't adhere to them either. And don't have self-centered idea, just understand they have Dhamma, rising and passing away, and do not try to be creative, do not try to be productive, and instead see what is happening.
Now presently what is happening completely gone, and so much of ideas about creativity and the productivity. And that is how the industry society came into being and the technology came into being. That is why the extrovert happens. That's why the exploitation happens. That's why the slavery happens. Because the productivity, that is the Protestant Christian, the Protestantism is being productive, considered as they are industrious. Always asking people to produce. Ultimately, they produce symmetries. Buddha says, Loka Vaddako, Susana Vaddako. If anyone is growing the worldly things, end up with so much of symmetries. You can see war symmetries, how neat, how clean they maintain. With this, they are pride. Each and every country, so-called civilized country, they have war symmetries. And they keep so clean because so much they sacrifice, something maybe the god or something other auspicious thing, but both lost as far as the understanding of themselves. The Buddha says, more than conquering 1,000 people, see yourself, conquer yourself, or get rid of the egotistic idea, then all the glorification, all the auspicious thing happen. But it is very difficult to sell this idea. People don't buy. They want to buy someone. Agent may come and save me. Just like the Santa Claus will come and bring my playthings, toys. So they are sleeping very nice. Otherwise Santa Claus will disturb and go back. So it's nice sleeping, and next day morning you can see some toys. That's exactly what the governments are telling us. And but still, myself and you, physically present here, knows we have our own balance. Without that much of sponsorship of the government, any sponsorship of any organization, we find our way, and we are exemplifying it. And that auspicious observation, seeing, I think, good than believing stars, believing the brighter people, and see the glory within yourself. And it happened me to read Mary Magdalene's Gospel, and she clearly says, you are reborn again and again. What you are doing, you have to suffer according to your deeds and not in this life, and the liberation is within. That is why she was chased. She was being chased away soon after the Jesus Christ, if I got correctly. And within. And no one will say, tell you, because then other person has no adverting power. Other person have no commanding power. If you are liberated by yourself, what the hell I have to tell you? What the hell you have to depend others? Big. So religious is, no, you can't release unless otherwise we come and bless you. Come along the line and I will bless you. Please put some money to the till box and then the deal is finished. So all the religion, they are what you call infested. Without that, religion can't stop, exist, but Dhamma can exist. So therefore, ditte sute silavate muteva punyecha papecha anupalito antajya Attajaho, neither pakubbamanu. Get rid of your selfishness or your self-centered idea and just be aware without doing unwholesome things. Very open, very clear, but you want to do something. Each and everyone you are doing is chased by desire and the conceit and the ignorance. So imagine when you are sitting with closed eyes and hand upon hand, so that you if you are entertaining that, I am doing nothing. The biggest auspicious thing. Not verbal, not physical, if you can even the mentally, and that understanding is possible. Even there is no understanding person, that experience is possible. So that is what the hidden idea there,
Otherwise, people believe on the religious masters and the stars and the politicians. That's all for me, from me. Yes?
Thank you, Swami Nansa and Buddha Rakita Bhante. The first time I sat meditation, I had been, you know, living that life of acquiring things and becoming very, very busy and living a householder life, basically. But the first time I sat meditation, I just did it on my own. I had a book that I read about meditation and was trying it myself, and it was so amazing because it was the first time I, you know, it was a revelation to me that, you know, the whole point to me, it seemed, of sitting meditation was to not do anything. So that was quite a gift, and I noticed that I started to feel sort of oppressed by all the belongings I had, and I started just getting rid of. Pretty soon, my apartment was pretty empty, and the spaciousness of that felt really good. I just noticed all these things I had that I never used or needed. So that's what comes up for me just about talking about
if you felt and if you got corrected, meditation is doing nothing. That your start is correct, I would say. In my case, I learned at the last. So I was trying to do something, to catch the anapanasati and get that knowledge and this knowledge and to sit cross-legged and to do walking meditation, doing. And ultimately, everyone is laughing at me because I had a group in Nilambe and the Eluana group. They are very elderly people. They are simple living, high thinking. They come and just sit. They never teach us. I am a very young fellow. Daily I go there and ask what to do. Only Venerable Dhammika told me, "You fool. You are fool." And that gave me contradictory. Then I asked, "The meditation is doing nothing. Any view is wrong. Any view is wrong. No view is the best." So I was completely 9 years revolutionizing. Because I am fast growing. Young man, robust young man, learning. I know I have a very good future because I am doing a science basic degree. And everything is shit. Everyone learn is you can't wash and clean. All the degree holders, you can't wash and clean. They never come to the meditation. They wanted to do. Of course, I also did the postgraduate, never mind. But it's for the fun. So I find that professors and institute is utter fool. No common sense. And it was very interesting for me that this thing, because the truth is within you. They are teaching this and that. You won't believe. We are being taught Australian climate, Queensland climate, to teach agriculture. How to make hay, how to make silo. We have never seen. We have learned and wrote the question and answer, we got pass marks. When I go to Australia also, I see how they make hay, how do they make silos. What is that? That is what you call silos. I am supposed to know, because I am an agricultural graduate, and I see a combined harvester. I see mass-scale agriculture, but we are peasant farmers. What we are being taught, exactly the same. So therefore I know, otherwise they would say I have never been to higher education, that is why I am looking down. No, they are always still future, other places, other time, other technology. Our existed technology is the best. peasant farming and decentralized system, everyone is like a king. Each and every farmer is like a king. They are fully contented people. Now they are spreading poisons. They are completely grab hold by the multinational companies. I am very happy Corona. We are going back to the forest and we collect green leaves. People come here to collect green leaves. Use no chemicals. And we can give, we can feed the whole village. I mean, we have enough. But the thing is, it appears like a mishap. It appears like a mishap. But this is the blessing in disguise. When you are reading that kind of a sutta, it says that don't worry about this thing. You are already in a blessed situation, but your religious masters and teachers tell you, no, no, you are a sinner. You have ancestral guilt and you have to suffer. The next time the God or someone will come and rescue you, till that, behave like a slave. I feel sorry for this kind of people. They expect out of me also to blessings and giving paritta. Then I am sorry. I am not such a person. I can share with you whatever the experience I have, but not otherwise. Not that I am a failure, but it make me give enough time for me. The way I am doing, I have my own time. I am not a slave to someone, and I am not making anyone slave. I am not influencing anyone's psychology. If at all I have done, I am so sorry. I am not influencing someone's psychology because I am not a master. I have no authority. Then I become answerable. I am not answerable. I am so free. And I live as my way. But I doubt. They say you are a forest monk, you are an unmarried person, therefore you can do. But we are married people. We have to do this and that. You selected your marriage. I bachelorship, continues to say, I am a registered bachelor. I am not a registered married person, registered bachelor. So even if you wish, try in the next life. Okay, now only we can read one stanza.
Having abandoned the former, attached to another, carried along by impulse, they do not cross the tie. They grab hold and let go like a monkey, grasping and letting go of a branch. So this is a very short and very very brief, like sketch of a verse. But here the idea is that of a Buddha or of a monkey. If you can imagine the monkey swinging through the trees, it grasps one branch, it lets go. It grasps the next branch, it lets go. It grasps the branch after that and it lets go. It's always just going from one branch to the next to the next. Similarly, like people are just going from one idea to the next, from one view to the next, from one job to the next, from one, like I mentioned in... one wife to the next wife, one car to the next car, one house to the next house. And they're just like ghosts, or they're just like the monkey swinging through the trees. They're not really finding a way out of suffering. They're not genuinely... they abandon one view or one idea or one attachment to only take up another view, another idea, another attachment. And they're just carried along by impulse. Impulse meaning like, an impulse meaning like no real insight. They're just impelled. They impulsively are attracted to some view or attachment or idea or house or car or another person. It's just an impulse. It's not through insight. And therefore, they do not cross the tie. Yeah, they do not cross the things that bind us. They are forever bound. They're bound by their impulses and they're bound by their views and they don't find a way out. So as I mentioned in a previous thing, the Buddha is not a philosopher. He's not somebody who just has views that he has concocted and it kind of forms a great idea or a great overall body of teaching. But instead, what he's teaching is coming from insight, from his own direct knowledge and his own understanding of the way the world really is. It's not coming from an effort to persuade other people or to come up with a very clever sounding religion. Rather, instead, it is an understanding coming from deep insight. And that's why, like in the previous verse, it can be very, very paradoxical. Like when I stated, untainted by merit and by evil, he has discarded what was taken up without creating anything here. So this sentence, for instance, can only be really understood by direct insight and wisdom and knowledge, because it's very, very paradoxical and it goes against, you know, the grain of life. So somebody who understands this only understands it because they directly know. It's not something that you can kind of understand logically or in a normal way understanding. You can only understand this through wisdom, through insight, through direct knowledge, through experience. And whereas most other people are like monkeys, just they abandon one view and they attach to another. And why they abandon the view? Because of impulse. Why they attach to another view? Because of impulse. Does this reveal anything to them? Do they understand anything? No, it doesn't do anything. So they don't cross the tide of ignorance. They're just like monkeys swinging from branch to branch and going from here to there. So that's what really describes samsara, that it is just wandering and wandering. And when I was in school, we did this kind of experiment of we had a glass chamber and you would puff some smoke into it. And then we would look carefully into that little glass chamber at the smoke, and we would look at it with a magnifying lens, and you could see the particles of smoke were like zigzagging and going here and going backwards and forwards and left and right and up and down. And it was just what they call Brownian motion. Brownian motion, yeah. Just how particles are moving through the air. So you can't see the air molecules, but you could see the particles of like dust, and they were being bashed by the air molecules. And it's just a random. Another word for this is called random walk. Or like here we talk about the monkeys growing from tree to tree to tree. It's kind of a random event. They're just moving along by impulse. And that's how most people are. They're just moving through life, even if they think they're being very well planned and organized, and they're making their way up the ladder of life, of prosperity, of status, of gain, of fame, of knowledge, of power. It's still actually just a kind of random walk, and it's not getting them out of samsara. It's not getting them out of the rounds of rebirth, and they just go from one life to the next to the next, and there's little to no gain along the way. There's little to no merit in what they're doing. There's little to no wisdom and insight in what they're doing. They're just monkeys going from one branch to the next.
So this is very good for Satipasala, because we always take the monkey mind. And the translation is Kapiva Sakang Pamukangahaya in the book. And the Sinhalese book says Kapiva Sakang Pamunchagahaya. The Pamukam is the first. Just like a monkey taking the first branch, but it's wrong. It says Pamuncha, releasing the branch. You jump into the other without looking at it. That's the monkey same. You just look, jump. No calculation. It says Kapiva Sakam Pamukangaha. It's a long theory put into the four words, one line. So it's a very good, stock phrase for Satipasana. So that's all. We are going to end up the today's session. Thank you very much for the participation. Time up for the Pindapatha.